Welcome to Synthaholics. It's your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien. He's back!
I'm back.
He didn't get hung up this time.
No.
And we also have Jen Bum with us, the Klingon Pop Warrior, you may remember from like only like 4 or 5 episodes ago.
Welcome back.
Ka-pla. Thank you. Good to be back.
How do you say good to be back?
I don't really think, I mean...
They don't say good to be back. They're just like, I'm here.
I think it's a stretch even when I say like, when I say shatloku, which means I thank y'all. Uh-huh.
Yes, they have a Klingon has a y'all. I love that.
Y'all.
Well, yeah, there's a singular you and a plural you. So
y'all. That's fantastic.
So it's basically
Klingons
y'all.
Are Southerners. I grew up in the South, so I'm proud of that.
I know you even text like that sometimes, y'all.
Oh yeah, I still say y'all. That's in my. I don't say use guys.
Yeah, we say use guys.
I say y'all.
Yeah.
Still, I've lived in the North for 10 years now.
Yeah. It's gotta be.
I lived in Minnesota for 8 years, and the little things that I picked up while I was there, like the oh for cute.
What does that mean? What's that mean?
It's just like if it's like something if something is really cute, it's actually O for cute.
Oh,
like, but when people say it up there, it's like O for cute. Oh, that's so cute. O for cute.
In Louisiana, they say "sha baby," and I'm like, what the fuck does that mean, "sha baby"? I'm like "sha's" not even a real word. Baby is, and I just mean like I guess they mean that's cute, but that makes no sense to me. That's one Southern idiom I did not pick up because it annoys me. It's like "bay." It's not a real word. "Sha" yeah. And "bay."
Yeah.
"Sha bay," "sha bay," "sha bay." Is that a Klingon word? "Sha bay." I think it sounds like a Klingon.
I think it's "shock bay." Is it "shock bay"?
"Shock bay."
Yeah, shuck bay is a word.
So like if you combine sha and bay, it's sort of a Klingon word if you like put some apostrophes in there to kill some of those vowels.
See, shuck the thing bay. Is, bet is a noun for a woman, but what's sha? So you could say shach to be present, and but there's actually a word if you're absent. But if you said shach, if you said shach be, you would be saying I'm not present. I'm not here.
I'm not here. Sounds like my life.
Shach be.
Yes, I've heard something to that nature. You know, it might not.
I feel like I've heard something that sounds kind of like shach.
It might not have been that.
But I mean the Q and the capital H have a very similar sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of hard to might be hard to differentiate them.
The big Q is supposed to be a little bit more forceful, where the big H is supposed to be more in like the back of the throat. So,
but they both have the
sometimes
sound
really hard when you're talking fast to distinguish.
Yeah, absolutely. So, before we get into the Discovery Talk and everything, Jen, if you remember last time she was on, she's got an Extra Life thing going on. She says if she reached $800 that she's going to do a live performance on her Extra Life day, and she's reached that landmark.
Yeah.
Yes. So my goal is $1,000, so there is still time to contribute, and I do have some more little like prizes and things to give away that I'll be announcing probably this week. And I've especially for Trek loving ladies in your life, I have some really cool jewelry from my absolute favorite jewelry maker that goes to a bunch of conventions. I have a whole bunch of really cool little jewelry pieces, so
nice.
You can get your Christmas shopping done early for the Trek ladies in your life. and
cool. Or the ones who merely tolerate it.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Which is a little Which is what my life is like.
Yeah, mine too. My wife's like, oh, you're going to talk Star Trek?
Right. Fine.
Okay. Yeah, so I have that. So, yeah, my goal is 1,000. So there's still time to contribute, absolutely. And I would love to break through that. But when I reached $800, I said I would do a live stream concert during Extra Life Day. So we are at $815 right now. And so the live stream concert's definitely happening. My goal is to do it probably around 2 or 3 p.m. Central Time so that people over in Europe can catch it as well. And it's early enough. It's not like in the middle of their night. And that's Saturday, November 4th.
Cool.
And then and I'll have a schedule of all the games I'm going to be playing throughout the day and stuff like that, too, coming out pretty soon. And then right now, if you contribute $25 or more, now this will not be in Klingon, but I will be doing karaoke throughout the day. Hmm. And so if you contribute $25 or more right now, you can pick a song for me to sing on while I'm as I do karaoke.
Let's
throughout the day.
Pick one is really hard for really stretch those vocals.
I really like
House of the Rising Sun.
I would love to do House of the Rising Sun.
I'd like
to
donate $25. House of the Rising Sun.
There you go.
I'll be in Klingon Ridges all day. So if you want Patsy Cline, I'll do Patsy Cline. Give me some jazz, whatever.
What's your favorite go to? What's your wheelhouse? If you just sing like name just like 2 or 3 songs that you think you would just nail right out of the park.
My favorite songs to karaoke are Midnight Train to Georgia, Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline.
That's a beautiful song, yeah.
And not so much anymore. What else? I used to like doing If I Had $1 Million with my husband.
the Bare Naked Lady song?
Yeah. He's from Rochester, New York, so he's a big BNL fan.
Yeah, it's weird because that's a 90s thing. Like, I don't think everyone knows them from their like later hits, but that first album was so freaking cult-like. I've seen them play live, and they were really good back in the day. I don't know what they're like now. So.
We've actually seen them a few times, and they're really fun. I'm not the as big a fan as he is, I think, especially because like you guys live in upstate, you know, or like Western New York, and right. They're right from around that area of Canada. And so they were huge in that area before they got popular in the rest of the country. And
right. That first album, Gordon, was really big around here. Really big.
Yeah. He loves them. And we've gone, I got us tickets 1 year when we were both living in Minnesota. We saw like one of their Christmas concerts, which was so freaking fun. And we saw them out here just a year or two ago. They were playing at the Ravinia Festival, which is this really nice outdoor festival. And they're still great. They're really fun live. They just dick around on stage.
They seem like really fun guys. I mean, like I said, I've seen them like I think 2 times, but that was, like I said, back in the mid to early 90s. So
yeah,
I was a youngin.
Yeah, so, they're fun live.
Yeah. Choose your pain.
$25, and you can, and yeah, literally, you can choose my karaoke pain.
Her pain, yes.
All right, we're gonna. So I'm gonna work on that one.
What is your first reaction to last night's house?
With spoiler free.
Spoiler free ish first reactions. Mine, I was really confused at the way I didn't think that was Laurel. Her makeup looked completely different than it did in the previous week's episode.
Oh, really? I didn't think so.
It looked so different. It looked like she had something like on her, between her chin and her lower lip.
Like a burn on the side of her face?
No. No, like on the front of her lip. And like she was like gray and not purple. Like
space herpes.
I don't know. Like she looked a lot softer last episode when she was having some intimate time with Vok.
Yeah.
And then like the way they were talking and like the way she just looked a lot softer. And then she looked a lot harder. I mean,
well, she's torturing people now.
But still, like her makeup looked different.
Well, it could have been a makeup issue, but my issue more than anything was I was confused because I think I said to you before we started the show, I thought she was on the Shinzu with Vok. I thought it's where she kind of like stranded herself with him.
Oh, see, I was under the impression that she had like she said, "Look, I have to do this." Well, and like she rescued him and then she went back and she's basically, I was under the impression there was a lot of subterfuge, which now we know how good her English is.
She's a spy.
She's a spy, so.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a spoiler, sort of, I guess.
Sorry.
Yeah. Damn it.
Oh, well.
Well, anyways, but
it's it doesn't really change anything. I mean, she's a Klingon. Klingons are dishonorably and deceptifugi anyway. So, I mean, that's not really a stretch, especially in wartime.
My thing was, I thought this had some of the, like, I don't know, it had a very, like, TNG feel where they have to go rescue the captain kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it seemed like, it seemed hard. It seemed like almost impossible if they didn't have the technology that Discovery has.
Oh, it would have been impossible. It would have been like Lorca would have been waiting for months.
Yeah.
Well, and I also felt like this episode had some of the really, like, we kind of touched on it with last week's episode, but this week we really had a very Trek-like moral dilemma in the treatment of the tardigrade.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was excellent. I thought this is where Trek comes out. This is where it shines.
Yeah, we saw that coming, but like how they resolved it, like, blew me away. I'm like, what's happening now? Like, going forward, that's what's on my mind now. Like, what's the
that's
deal
a good
going
show.
Forward?
If yeah. you're asking what happens next, what's next? What's next?
Right. Exactly. I mean, it has
where
been.
Are they gonna, right.
It has been so very good.
Yeah. It definitely still has that. The mystery going on with everything, but also there's still that, like, this cloud of darkness over Discovery that I don't think is going to lift for a long time. You know, it's obviously they're at war, so it's like dark stuff's happening and people are pushed to their limits, but it's still very kind of creepy. You know, it's not the shiny Trek. We're in like a we're in a different world right now.
Which I'm really enjoying. And so many people online are like, it's not Star Trek. They're not doing the exploring strange new worlds. And I'm like, yeah, Star Trek was set up to explore strange new worlds. That was like the hook at the beginning. But Star Trek has alluded to all these different types of wars in its history. Why is it not Star Trek to show part of what Star Trek has alluded to?
Yeah.
It just blows me away. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like Lorca is a completely different captain. Like, we've known that captains like Lorca exist. These sort of warmongering, to some extent, these, like, war-fueled captains. But, like, this is our first, like, real war captain, like, as a central character.
I love him so much.
I hate him, but in a guy, I love to hate him.
That's how Guy was. We had him on last week. He's like, he loves to hate him. It's like, I love watching him as a captain, but I would never, ever want to serve under him. If I had to serve under a captain, it would be absolutely Picard, because Picard is so laissez-faire. I like him a lot, but Lorca will fucking kill you.
He will.
Yes,
so,
he will.
So I am like, I love watching him on screen because he's so different than anything we've gotten before. But like, I would never ever want to serve under him. I would try to transfer if that was ever a thing.
I'm kind of on the fence with him. I don't like dislike him and I don't like love him, but I feel that he's a part of the plot that we're going to see unfold.
Oh, she's so compelling to watch though.
And he's going to do some. I know there's something crazy he's going to pull sooner or later. He's not. Whatever you see right now, that's not where it's going to. That's where it's going to land. He's going to do something really crazy later on. You're going to be like, "No, you bastard!" So yeah.
Oh man. So let's get into spoiler territory. We're going to do our episode breakdown, then talk about it as per the usual with Discovery episodes.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have not seen Choose Your Pain, episode 5, definitely turn it off
now.
Choose your pain.
Is spoilers your pain? Then keep listening.
Right, exactly. So this is obviously Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Episode 5, and it aired October 15th, 2017.
I love how you love saying the
date. Love saying, because I used to always say 1992 or something like that. Now this is 2017, so I feel good saying that. So we start off, Lorca is at a Starfleet space station, and he's...
I love the look of it. I was like, ooh, that's cool.
It's extremely different from anything we've seen
before. It almost looks like a Firefly capital ship. It just looks like a giant building sticking out in the middle of space.
Yeah. It's cool. I guess you can do anything in space, really. He's going on to Admiral Cornwell about the great things that Discovery has done. And basically...
We torture a tardigrade? That's pretty awesome.
But with a spore drive that they've been basically, you know, wiping the map with the war effort. And the Starfleet's worried that that the tardigrade and the spore drive is so unique that they have to figure out.
We got
to
replicate it.
You've got to do
this. Let's get more tardigrades.
And everyone's, I guess, Starfleet's on this hunt for more tardigrades. And at the, in the meantime, they're asking them to back off on using the spore drive and you know use in don't you just use warp.
Just use it sparingly. Don't overuse it. You're our ace in the hole, and we need to be able to call on you for that ace in the hole.
Captain Lorca does not share her feelings on this.
Absolutely not. Like, he's been giving free rein to do whatever he wants, and now he's getting some reins put on him. He's like, no!
And it was a really interesting point, too, that later on after their little confab thing they were going on there, they had Cornwell meets up with Lorca. And they're like, you know, she says, why don't you fix your eyes? Which is an interesting thought. You know, we are in the future. There's no reason his eyes couldn't get probably somewhat repaired. It's a weird thing that.
In the first episode that he was in, he said, like, they need to heal on their own over time. Otherwise, I have to get, like, Geordi eyes or something like that.
Yeah, well, get Geordi eyes.
No.
Anyways, he's
clinging on to being human as much as Klingons want to keep on being Klingon.
Well, the interesting thing is Cornwell mentioned something like, you know, look, I'm your friend. And he's like, you're right.
It's like, you're too much of a doctor to be my friend. I don't like doctors.
It was really interesting. It was a strange exchange they had right there. So basically they're taking off. He's on a shuttlecraft going back to the Discovery when a Klingon ship just works.
That was not a D7.
It wasn't a D7.
But they said, man, it was a D7. Yeah. I was so pissed when they said it's a D7.
My husband's biggest gripe is that the ships don't look like the Klingon ships and that we're only used 10 years to.
Call it a D6 or a D5 or a D something that's not a 7.
Yeah.
I know what a D7 looks like.
Yeah.
Although later they called it a bird of prey. So, I mean, like, on the Discovery. So, like, I don't think they know what Klingon ships are called. I don't know.
I got a question about the D7. Maybe you could answer this. So the D7, obviously, we saw the D7 with the Romulans and with the Klingons, right? In the original series. Didn't they have, because they had cloaking devices?
No.
No, there was just all Klingons?
Somebody's Klingons only showed the D7. They only saw the Romulan ship, Balance of Terror. And that was
Balance
like,
of Terror.
It looked like Enterprise saucer with two Enterprise nacelles stuck to the side of it.
No. What about the Enterprise incident where they steal the cloaking device off the ship and Spock seduces the Romulan captain?
Wasn't that still the same ship, though, from Balance of Terror?
Was it? I thought it was a D7. I'd have to look back.
I'm really bad with my TOS.
I'm bad with my TOS too. I don't remember seeing, like, I barely remember seeing D7s in TOS anyway.
Well, they were there, but
I know, like, they were in a couple of triples, I think.
A couple episodes, yeah. But there was also, you know, and where did the Klingons acquire the cloaking device?
See, I always assumed that they stole it.
Takuvma, I mean, hopefully we'll learn that Takuvma stole them from the Romulans. Right. Because I feel like the Bird of Prey, the ones that are called Bird of Prey, it's sort of shaped like, they look way more Romulan than they
That's
look
Klingon.
That's
what I always thought.
I always thought it was like stolen warbird technology.
Yeah.
Maybe. But the thing, the rumor was that in Balance of Terror, like, it was left out of the script, but the rumor was in the script that that the Romulans actually stole it from the Federation. Some, like, the technology. So it's like it keeps jumping through from Earth to Romulus to Kronos.
Interesting. Well, okay, so
that would be weird because they refuse to use cloaking technology. Like, even when they start using it in Deep Space Nine, it's like a big friggin' deal that they're
actually
using.
We're actually before that treaty that forbids the Federation from using cloaking technology.
Federation always keeping up with it.
I don't understand. Like, they're like, oh, well, we're going to sign the treaty where we're not going to use cloaking technology, but everyone else doesn't have to sign it. I'm like, then what's the point? That makes no sense to me at all. It's like the whole point of treaties is so that, you know, you're on even ground.
Right. So Lorca is hijacked, basically, and kidnapped in the from the Klingon.
It should have killed the driver, though.
They did kill that driver.
A couple bat lefts to the chest.
They did kill that driver.
Yeah. I was like, oh, he's not getting back up. I'm like,
That's
we're
going
to start calling them blue shirts instead of red shirts.
I know, but they're all blue shirts. Well, they got different sides.
I don't know. Stamets and the doctor, they're wearing red shirts to bed. I actually tweeted Stamets last night, and I was like, please don't tell me those red shirts are, you know, have any specific meaning to them. Hashtag, please don't be red shirts. He liked my tweet, but he hasn't responded to it yet.
I said to my husband last night with the blue uniforms, I really actually dig the blue uniforms because they feel like more of a natural progression off of the Enterprise uniforms from the TV show Enterprise, with that blue, with blue being such a huge focus. I feel like, oh, this is just to me a natural progression for Starfleet uniforms.
It is, but they more kept than. They kept it for 90 years and all of a sudden switched to multicolored pajamas. Like, that seems like a weird switch.
Yeah.
Well, technically, Pike is already wearing it.
Yeah, Pike's wearing
it. Pike's already wearing that already.
Yeah, absolutely. When they get captured, he's thrown in a cell, and who do we have is our old friend,
Harry Mudd.
Fenton Mudd.
He was great. I wish he had more scenes in the show.
We're going to see him some more.
Oh, he's in at least two episodes, and the scene we saw in the trailer was not in this episode, so.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think he's going to put Lorca in some kind of, like, trap maze, because he's like, in the trailer, he's like, you're getting close to boom. Like, I'm just like, oh, he's going to, like, fuck with Lorca.
Right.
Can't wait.
Right. And if you do want to hear our background information, we did a whole podcast on Harry Mudd.
All his episodes.
One whole episode. Nice. It's episode 127, Synthaholics. It's all about Harry Mudd. We go over all three episodes, including animated series, which we watched for your pleasure.
So you don't have to.
Right, exactly. Okay, so... So he runs into Harry Mudd, and then we get a great exchange between Rainn Wilson's Harry Mudd and Lorca, which is awesome. Harry Mudd tells Lorca how he racked up enormous debts when he was trying to.
He mentions his wife. His wife, so Stella. Great.
Yeah, and
bought her a moon. I remember Quark wanting to buy a moon. Like, apparently that's like the thing in the future, buying people moons.
That's like buying a mansion. So anyways, after they go through their little like introduction, the Klingon guards come in and they say, choose your pain.
And they just point at the guy.
Oil you with.
Yeah. And they just.
They were actually saying it would be oil you with.
Is that how they were saying it?
They weren't. They were actually saying it in English. But that's if you were to say choose your pain in Klingon Khol, it would be oilage you with.
Huh. Oilage you with. That would have been great. And then they just point to the guy in the corner. It's like, yeah. And they just beat the crap out of him. Yeah.
Oh, my God. They really, like, kicked. And then they, like, just – when they kicked him in the face, it was like, oh, no.
Yeah. They did the whole Khan thing. With what's his name, the admiral, when he crushed her.
Oh yeah,
crushed his head.
Well, no, but it's like they beat him up a little bit, then they take him away to torture him. It's like, it's not just we're gonna torture you, we're gonna mess you up a little bit before you get tortured, just for funsies. But
pre-game.
Well, they do it in front of the other prisoners, which is definitely. Tactic, I feel like a definite tactic. And I also think it's really funny that when they come back later. And start to beat on Ash. They do almost the exact same set of moves. Like they throw him in the knees, punch him in the face, throw him back and forth a couple times, and then kick him in the head.
Klingons are methodical, man.
They got those moves down.
It's extremely methodical. I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, and then Mudd explains that what you have to do is what the Klingons do to
make sure you can't band together.
Yeah, pit the prisoners against each other. Who's going to get picked as who gets tortured, and then they, you know, obviously they drag you away. You get tortured, and it's a great time.
Ash gets a great time. He gets all that Klingon loving.
Yeah, that was a weird.
That was a little odd and disturbing.
Yeah, what was that about? Like, why would she even want to? Like, what does he have to offer? So
I think he's Vok.
You think he's Vok?
I think he's Vok in disguise.
How is that even possible?
They've changed Klingons into humans all the in Trouble with Tribbles, well, and then in Trials and Tribulations they changed Klingons into looking like humans all the time.
Well, if he's in Lorca's if he's in Lorca's office and a Tribble freaks out,
I want to see that Tribble freak out. Tribble, he's got to have a Tribble for some reason on his desk. Like, there's got to be a plot reason for his Tribble to be sitting on his desk. Like, they can't just leave a Tribble there and just he's got a pet Tribble because that's dumb. It's got to be a Klingon detector, and Lorca knows.
I don't know if I'm necessarily like if that's where I'm going, but I definitely don't think he's a good guy. I just don't. I'm not really sure where he falls on my spectrum right now.
That's how it all goes.
Well, I just want him to be Vok so bad because it's like Trouble with Tribbles. You got a Klingon disguised as a human. Laurel told him specifically that you've got to give up everything. Like, being that's Klingon true. Is giving up everything, especially with Klingon Mach Kachaj. Like, like remain Klingon for, that's like giving that up, especially if you're the follower of T'Kuvma. That's huge. It's literally giving up everything.
That's a very interesting theory.
Granted, someone tweeted at me and told me that he's just hanging out with the Mokai women. I'm like, okay, but... That's not giving up a lot if you're just hanging out with a Mokai woman, since they kind of dig you, or at least Laurel does.
Right.
So, I mean, that doesn't seem like a losing thing. It's just like orgies. I'm sorry.
Orgies. Well, anyways, as we just kind of talked about, Lorca meets another Starfleet officer, Lieutenant Ash Tyler, who's been captured at the Battle of the Binary Stars. He's been there for seven months.
That's what makes me like scratch my head. He's been there for 7 months. He's not dead yet. He's sleeping with Laurel. All things that Bok has done. He's been at the.
And I keep forgetting how much time has passed too since that episode. I was like, 7 months. Oh yeah, that's right. Burnham went to jail for a while.
Yeah, it was like 6 months between episode 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And then I guess 1 month since episode 4 and 5. So it's interesting.
Right. Yeah. So Lieutenant Ash Tyler offers Lorca a little piece of food. He says, you just don't know when they're going to feed you. And while they're talking about that, all of a sudden a little robot spider comes and grabs it and takes off with it and gives it to...
It looked like a Dorito. A really ugly, moldy, thick Dorito.
Lambus bread. So the robot spider, it works obviously for Mudd, and he's like, hey, I gotta
look out for number one.
Right.
Which is totally a Mudd thing to do.
And and then all of a sudden the Klingons come in and they grab Lorca, and that's where he goes and meets Laurel. She
did not look like a Laurel in this episode.
She speaks English very well, and she wants to know all about the spore drive, and then he just starts making fun of her for sleeping with a human.
And it's like, so Klingons have two sets of junk each. Like, I understand they've got redundant internal organs, but they don't have four arms, they don't have two heads, they don't have four legs. Why do they have other redundant, like, extremities? That's
all I know
weird.
Is
that was weird, and I kind of wondered if he was just
lot.
Trying to get a rise out of her.
Deanna Troi.
Maybe she couldn't take it after a while. She's like, I need to go back to Riker. I can't deal with the two or three of them.
It's the barbs. I can't handle the barbs.
I don't know. It's just, I'm like, it just, that one sentence from Lorca, like in her face, is just like, is he just messing with her? Or is this changing the way all the Klingon-human relationships have
gone?
Well,
and like it always,
that's just weird.
There's always a thing I have with Star Trek. Maybe other sci-fi too, is that they always have species interbreeding, and it's literally like Carl Sagan wrote in one of his books that it's literally impossible for it'd be like trying to breed a dog with a tomato. Like the DNAs don't even match. Like,
well, that's why they had that TNG episode where that one race seeded all the intelligent races of Star Trek.
But you still can't have. I mean, you can't have babies with a dog.
Yet. didn't you post the thing about the half pig, half
man? Yeah, but that's a genetic. Yeah, they're genetically making a pig man, but that's a different story. I think the Chinese are doing that.
They need to sprinkle a little bit of bear in there.
Yeah, pig man bear.
Man bear pig.
Man bear
I'm pig. Super cereal.
I'm super cereal, dude. Okay, so, and then he gets tortured by putting some Clockwork Orange things on his eyes and shining lights into his eyes.
I thought they were going to do something a little bit different, like with Geordi, because it looked very similar to the time the Romulans captured Geordi.
Yeah.
And, like, they forced his eyes open even though he's blind.
Yeah.
In my head, all I could think was, there are four lights.
That's exactly, yeah. Yeah. Just pulling that.
He's like, I don't care how many lights there are. They're too bright. Turn it down.
That's way too
bright. That's what Lorca was thinking.
That's way too bright, guys. How many lumens are in that? All right. So he comes back after that, and he starts going in that he knows that he smashes
Lorca's spider.
Yeah, not Lorca's, mud spider.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And that there's a little, like, listening device, and that he heard Laurel parrot some of the things that they said in the jail cell.
I don't get that. Like, why would he assume that's mud? I mean, like, they're on a Klingon ship in a jail cell. Like, why isn't it just bugged to begin with?
That's a good question, too.
That seems kind of like, why are you – I mean, I guess to make mud seem like a worse bad guy, but I'm just like
– I mean, but
– you're on the Klingon
that
ship.
It was his pet, and it was on his shoulder, and it was not hard to find it on the – like, once Lorca picked it up, it didn't take him long to find the device. So it would – to me, it seems like he knew what was going on, and he if he's trading favors so that he doesn't get tortured – I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's all self-interest for Harry Mudd. Well, so.
I get that, but I'm just like, it's a Klingon ship. They're on a Klingon ship and a Klingon jail cell. Why isn't it just bugged to begin with? Like, why do you need this?
True.
Why do you need this extra robot with like a device on its back? Like, you're on their ship. It's not like they're somewhere else. I mean, like sensors, listening devices. Like, I'm sure there's a holocam on that room. I mean, like, they don't need a freaking little spider.
Yeah, it's drama, Dave.
I know. Sorry.
What are you going to do?
I nitpick.
I know. I nitpick. Well, anyway, so they basically out that Mudd's been working with the Klingons at this point. And Lieutenant Ash Tyler and Lorca are going to get tighter.
As this episode goes on.
Yes. Let's just jump back to Discovery. So Burnham is basically concerned that the Spore Drive is having a negative effect on the tardigrade. It seems sluggish. It's not that enthusiastic anymore.
No.
Not a happy tardigrade.
It's a sad tardigrade.
Very sad.
Saru has been made acting captain, and he needs to make jumps to get to rescue Captain Lorca. And when Saru wants to get this spore drive to start making – because they're – calculating where they might have taken Lorca, and so he needs the spore drive ready. Berman brings up the thing, hey, this might not work. This tardigrade, it seems like it's not dying, but it's not doing too well.
Yeah, they notice that there's some kind of thing going on in its brain where it's kind of degenerating a little bit.
And he gets Michael Burnham gets Dr. Culber to look at the creature, and his scans basically say yes, that's true. There's something going on. You know that this
it's not as healthy as it once was. It's a little less rippy today.
Doesn't want to tear you apart as much.
It wants to cuddle today. It's not in a good mood.
Unrelated. I just love his white uniform.
That's kind of cool. Yeah,
it's cool looking, except for like whenever you start cutting people open, you get blood on it.
I never understood about doctors.
White is so unflattering on so many people, but he looks good.
You look good in white. Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a good cut too.
Yeah,
yeah.
The uniforms look good. I like the uniforms. Whether they match up with canon. Wise, it still looks good. So whatever,
they're beautiful uniforms.
So when Berman brings us up to Saru, Saru is basically like,
"Stand down, don't mess with it, go away."
Just yeah, stop talking to me. And next, so Berman, like I said, she talks to Dr. Culber. Culber agrees, and so they bring this all up to Stamets that this is an issue, and this could, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to the tardigrade if we just keep on using it for multiple jumps.
So they make some fun serum that they can inject another living life form with.
Interesting enough that they take part of the DNA of the tardigrade, and they find that it can infuse it into human DNA because human and fungi share common DNA.
Who knew?
Good to know.
Science knew.
Science knew.
Science knew.
Science knew. So anyways, but they're, you know, obviously this is shooting yourself full of, you know,
alien. Tardigrade DNA.
Can't be good for the complexion. So
not that Stamets has much complexion, but.
Man, that guy's pale, and I thought I was pale. so anyways, when they start making the actual idea where they're going to, where they have to track down Captain Lorca, they Saru orders a jump, and they take the jump, and they're the tardigrade just folds up like a
oh my god,
roly poly,
yeah, just like meh, I'm
it
just, done.
It,
just
it was so sad. It
rolls I'm up so- and.
Yeah. I mean, we knew something was probably going to happen, but that was not what I expected. And I'm like, oh, they killed it.
I thought it died. It just like it spilled out all its water. Oh, the poor little water bear is going up all its water.
Yeah. Yeah. So the tardigrade is down for the count. And
it's just hibernating.
And they are deep in Klingon territory at the moment. And, you know, Berman was like, I told you this was going to happen, and you didn't listen to me. And Saru is like,
go to your quarters. Stay there.
Stay there. Don't go to your room.
No TV.
So interesting thing about – yeah, right. Interesting thing about Saru is that
he's unsure of himself.
Very unsure of himself. And he did a like list all the captains. Very interesting that they had Archer – Pike.
Every single captain that we've known.
Captain April was only mentioned in the animated series.
Yeah.
And who else do they show? Oh.
Archer.
I said Archer.
You said Archer.
Matt Decker.
Decker, yeah.
Decker.
And yeah. Christopher Pike.
I'm like, Christopher Pike's still on the Enterprise for the 10 years. He's already that decorated? Yeah. Like, already? I was kind of like, whoa, that's interesting. And Saru made a point of saying alive and deceased, and there's only one that's dead, Archer.
Right,
which also proves that this isn't in the JJ universe, because apparently Archer's still alive, because he's upset that Scotty beamed away his prized beagle. So for people who are upset that they think this is JJ universe, this is not.
Oh. I love how you just connected things, those dots.
More things to let you know this is not the JJ universe. just FYI, I just have to point that out there for people who keep holding on to that hope that it's the JJ universe so they can hate the show. You don't have to hate the show. It's not the JJ universe.
Well, why it's even,
just good TV.
Why even hate it?
Why is not Erica Hernandez on there? Like the second Enterprise, or why is there no one between Archer and Decker? Because I would assume Decker is probably the oldest. Or no, not maybe April would be the oldest.
They're just throwing us a bone. Everyone else who doesn't know. I mean, like only deep fans like us will know Robert April.
But those are all names we know. Like there wasn't any like random name that we don't know about. It's just like apparently no one got decorated between Jonathan Archer and April.
Well.
That's a big span of years for no one to get very many captaining awards.
I don't know how exactly it goes, but you know, obviously Archer, April, Pike, Kirk.
Kirk became one of the most decorated captains too.
Right, but I'm just saying.
What about Axanar guy?
Somebody mentioned
he was supposed to be in there.
Garth of Izar.
Garth of Izar, because that's what Kirk. He grew up. What about all his exploits?
Some people are thinking that Lorca is Garth of Izar. Some people have been throwing that out. Which would make an interesting, because if you watch Whom Gods Destroy, I mean, the guy.
Garth isn't human, though.
Yeah. He got remade, remember? He was ripped apart or something during the battle, and these aliens remade him. And they say that in Whom Gods Destroy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that made him mad. And Lorca doesn't seem like he's totally.
I hope he's not Garth of Izar.
I think he is.
I hope not.
Anyways, whatever. too much speculation. All right, back to the show. So, like we said, the tardigrade went into his little
hibernation
thing. They're stuck in Klingon territory. They're looking for Captain Lorca at the moment, and they're talking about how to deal with the tardigrade DNA and how they could interface with the spore drive. Here we get the idea that someone's going to get injected with it, and when they want to inject.
And we get our F bomb.
The first F bomb.
The first two F bombs in Star Trek.
Ever.
Tilly.
And it was nerding about science. Like, how perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I was like, whoa.
Wow, they dropped the F-bomb twice.
It came out of Tilly, though. Because Tilly is like the queen of verbal diarrhea.
Yeah.
And so it makes absolute sense that she would just like vomit out a, would like just vomit out a fucking and like.
Maybe she has Tourette's and she's holding it back.
Yeah, it could be. Then, we don't know.
And like as soon as she did it too, she just, she knew it, it was like, you could see her mortification. She was like, oh my God, I just said that.
But I like that Stamets goes, yeah, it is fucking cool. So.
Well, it's great. And they use it for a little bit of a comedic bit, which swearing always needs to be a comedic bit in Star Trek because it just doesn't have any place really in Star Trek without it being like played for jokes.
Yeah.
Especially like in Star Trek Beyond where like horse shit and he pulls it out.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Or how about when Data goes, you know, oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always played for fun.
So yeah, for funsies. So, at that point, back on the Klingon prison ship,
it's a Star Destroyer. It's shaped like a wedge. It's not a D7.
I don't know what it is.
It's a bird of prey.
So, Lieutenant Tyler and Lorca, when they're, the Klingons come in to choose your pain, they jump on the Klingons and snap both their necks. I thought that for prisoners who've been tortured and not well fed, they do pretty well.
They snapping do necks. Do pretty well. Like all those redundant Klingon organs don't seem to do them any good. Like,
I was impressed though because there was definitely a fight that happened. It wasn't like they just like jumped on their backs and snapped their necks. There was a struggle.
Oh yeah,
and the struggle was real.
Right, it was.
But Klingon should just be twice as strong as a human. Just all those redundant organs, like all those extra ribs. Like it's just so funny how Klingons go down so easy to humans.
Oh, down I go. Lorca gets a pretty sweet gun. And starts.
Oh yeah, it's like knives on it,
like evaporating people.
Yeah, that was like the disruptor set on. Yeah, a total max annihilation.
Kill. Yeah, maximum kill.
It's like, have you played Fallout 4, Jen?
No.
Or any of the Fallout games with the plasma guns just turn into like a little pile of goo? It's like that's what it reminded me of.
Well, they leave mud in the prison. And,
oh yeah,
because he vows that he will get revenge.
I will get you, Lorca.
Did you guys watch After Trek?
Yes.
Did you see the poll for they did the poll of,
I was so mad.
Should they have left Harry Mudd behind? 77% of people, which included myself, I got in a response. 77% of people said, hell yes, they should have left him behind.
I tried to get in. I was too late to get on it, but I wanted to say no because I'm like, I like
it
Harry Mudd.
It was apparently one of the the most like of all the polls they've run so far, it was the most cut and dry.
Well, Harry Mudd is obviously, it's a fun character, but you want to be stuck with him.
Oh, I want to see him. I was hoping he'd escape so that
but
the next
if you
episode...
personally were with sure. Harry Mudd, he no. would take advantage of you and you'd empty your bank account.
That's all he does.
And do everything bad, you know.
And now we get to see him be revengey. So
I've never seen revengey Harry Mudd.
Well, I Mudd is sort of revenge.
It backfired on him.
Everything backfires on Mudd. But anyways, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so they basically, they're shooting their way out of the ship where they run into Laurel.
Ash is like, I can't go on. Go ahead. Go without me. Lorca runs and then Laurel shows up and he gets a boner. So he stands right up.
But Lorca is just around the corner. And when he's with Laurel, he takes a shot and just grazes her face. And
so I hope she's still alive. So I guess her makeup's going to change again next episode where she's got like a Borg implant on her face.
She's probably going to be all scarred. So this is going to be an interesting, going to be unique for her. So,
and my question is, did he miss on purpose?
I think he just missed by accident.
Cause wait, who shot? Was it Ash?
No, Lorca shot.
Lorca shot at her.
At her, and because
that was another moment where my husband was like, "Kill her! Why didn't he just kill her?"
That's a good point. Yeah, but you know, drama.
Drama.
Now, don't kill Laurel. I love Laurel.
I do too.
Meanwhile, they must have stole some fighters or some kind of like
raiders.
Yeah, they're interesting ships.
Those strange peacock things.
Yeah, very strange.
That's not Klingon. I swear they've like raided some like Romulan stuff. Like this doesn't. But all the heads up displays look Klingon. Like I am so impressed by all the little knickknacks in the show, like the heads up displays and the little things. Like the red alert on Discovery looks like. Like movie era, TOS era, like Red Alerts things, like those look so cool, and
the
screens in the Raiders look like Klingon ships out of Star Trek IV.
Right,
they
right.
look just like the little blocky things, and they're all red and stuff like that. That was awesome.
Yeah,
the detail they were paying in the
ships themselves are so weird. Those ships were those little. Puddle jumpers or whatever you want to call them, or just goofy.
Those were awful looking on the outside, but I mean the inside, those are cool.
Yeah, they're interesting ships because we never saw anything even quite like that. We never actually see too many fighters.
Not in Star Trek.
In Star Trek, it's always
Red Squad. That's about the only time we saw fighters.
Yeah, exactly. Red Squad. So while they're getting chased by them,
and that group of fighters that runs into the Enterprise D, they only got lasers, and the Enterprise D just takes them all out.
Oh yeah. Lasers.
I love how people photoshopped like TIE fighters over them.
I like Riker goes lasers. Like, what are you in the Stone Age? Okay, so. At that same time, Discovery sees them flying through space, and they're like, Saru makes the calculation that the lead ship that's coming towards them is actually being chased. They're not; it's not like a direct path. He's zigzagging and he's escaping because Saru.
And he's like, "Oh, it must be Lorca." The one thing I liked about After Trek was someone was like, if that was Lorca in command, he'd just shot them all, and like Saru would be dead.
Right. Yep.
Well, and then so they beam Lorca and Tyler up, and they're safe. And then Saru orders them to go jump, put the spore drive back on.
And Stamets is like, "Is the tardigrade ready?" He's like. I can jump.
We're ready.
He didn't say the tardigrade was there. Tardigrade. He was like, yeah, we can jump.
Right.
I think.
And Discovery gets out of there, and next we find out that...
why is Stamets' life sign so erratic?
Stamets had injected himself with the DNA, and he used himself as the navigator for the spore drive. When they rush down to check on him, he's sitting there unconscious, and when he wakes up, he's just laughing, which is pretty surreal.
That was awesome. Yeah. I was like, ooh, he is messed up.
It was neat because I wasn't necessarily sure who. I was like, somebody got injected.
I thought maybe it was Michael because of her dream at the beginning.
I forgot about the dream. I never mentioned the dream
at the beginning.
Right. Yeah. So
it's not integral to the plot. It didn't happen. So. Yeah.
So I was curious who they were going to inject because I figured they weren't going to figure out how to get the tardigrade and they weren't going to do that because they clearly at that point, everyone who was involved in making that decision outside of Saru was not comfortable with that idea. So it was just a matter of who are we going to find out?
I figured it'd be Michael because she's most expendable. I mean, like she has no rank. She's there only because Captain Lorca pulled her up as an asset. So I was expecting it to be her.
Reasons for drama. Because Michael Burnham's got to last. She's the main character.
Sure. But I mean, Stamets is still alive.
You don't kill Rick Grimes. All right.
But they didn't even cut off his hand. So, I mean, that's BS.
I know. That's BS. Anyway, so next we get an exchange between Saru and Michael Burnham that basically he's like, she's like, "Do you think I'm dangerous?" or that kind of idea. And he's like, "No, it's not that I think you're dangerous. I resent that you got Captain Giorgio killed and that, you should have been captain, made captain of your own ship. And I would have been under her tutelage. And I would have gained all that experience. And unfortunately, because of what happened, I didn't get that." And so he resents her for that. And she gives Saru her telescope. Obviously, Michael Burnham feels...
I almost thought he was going to be like, "Oh, wait, no, she left it to you." But he's like, "Nope, I'm taking this.
I'm taking that."
Yeah. I was that kind of surprised me. Saru's like, "Yep, I'm not gonna fight this."
Saru
that is... That scene was so beautiful. Doug Jones... I mean, he is his character work when he is in full makeup in all of the films and things that he has done has always been exceptional. And that's what he's known for. But to really see how much emotion he was able to put through that makeup.
And that makeup looks like it doesn't look he's able to do much with that makeup, but he can do so much. I totally agree.
So much. His face was so stunning in that entire scene, and so much came through. He's got stuff in his eye contacts. Right. He's got the full, like, what do they call them? Scleral lenses or whatever you want to call them. He's got those full lenses and he still conveys so much beautiful emotion through it. And that scene was really beautiful as character work went for him. He was giving Michael and Sonequa Martin-Green so much to work with on her side too. It was a lovely scene.
It was very interesting. And it was interesting to see what his resentment stemmed from. It wasn't that he felt that she was dangerous. I mean, he's even said, you know, how much he admired Michael Berman and saying, you're probably the most, you know, intelligent Starfleet officer I've ever worked with. And,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, but to have him be like, you deprived me of what I needed to be a better officer. So that was interesting. Next scene we get that he gives her you got to get the tardigrade up and running or figure out what to do. And Michael Berman just gives the tardigrade
some shrooms and then shoots that in the space
and the tardigrade disappears. I'd be like,
Where did the tardigrade's water come from once it got in space?
That's what I was wanting to say. I'm like, how did it fill itself up with water? I mean, space is a vacuum. I mean, there is water in space, but not enough to fill up a tardigrade.
Maybe there's
in that one spot.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe there's water. Whatever. Maybe there's water in with the shrooms.
You know, you always have to get a little bit of hinky science on Star Trek, and I think we just reached max hinky with that one.
Yeah, but he was like, peace out.
It looked a flash. He was like, see ya.
Yeah, I'm gone. The only thing I would hope is that Michael Berman put like some kind of tracking device on it.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. She does not want to put any more tardigrades in the stress, no matter how much Starfleet wants more of them.
Right. Yeah. So the last scene we have is that we have Stamets and Dr. Culber are kind of like brushing their teeth, end of the day.
Sonic toothbrushes. They had no bristles.
That was interesting. I saw those too.
I love the sonic tooth. Yeah. I want one of those like Starfleet regulation sonic toothbrushes.
It's like the real sonic hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then we get the obviously they're showing that they're a couple. And while they're talking, he's like, well, I'm glad that you're all right. I've been, you know, obviously Dr. Culber is worried about Stamets. And when he walks out, then Stamets, you know, smiles in the mirror and then walks away. And all of a sudden he's still in the mirror and then he walks away.
Oh, man, you guys. So I went to the Chicago Star Trek convention. And there was a panel with all of the members of the Next Gen Bridge crew, except for Picard. But we also had Tasha Yar, and Jonathan Frakes dropped some spoiler knowledge that night that he probably wasn't necessarily supposed to drop, in which he said there was going to be a Mirror Universe episode. And you should have heard that theater after he said that there was going to be a Mirror Universe episode. And I think we just saw the origin, like, I think we just saw the start.
Well, there's a couple
window.
Well, like I said to Dave, like, that was a complete Twin Peaks moment, like at the very end where of season two, when Dale Cooper gets taken over by the evil entity of Bob and he's like looking in the mirror and he's like evil. So that's that. I got like, oh, that's Twin Peaks. That's it. You know, that's the evil looking back at you. But is two thoughts. One is Stamets is the guy who returned from the Mirror Universe, and two, did he go to or can he access the Mirror Universe or something to that nature? Like there's somehow, I mean, obviously in Deep Space Nine, we had the beaming.
Beaming into the Mirror Universe. Every single season, we get someone beaming in from the Mirror Universe. I'm right. Like,
yeah. But an interesting thought. I mean, if you're standing and you're looking in a mirror and you just flip this, like literally flip it around, like, are we just going to see what's going on in the reflection of the mirror? I'm excited. I'm excited to see where this is going and what we're going to get from it.
It's very interesting. And there's a lot of, you know, it just provokes a lot of offbeat thinking, too.
It does. But, like, they freed the tardigrade. We've got the evil Stamets, possibly, in the Mira. We know that Jonathan Frakes dropped that bomb that there's going to be a Mirror Universe episode. But is the rest of the season going to get into the Mirror Universe? Like, where's the bigger picture of the rest of the season going to go? Because I thought the tardigrade was going to be a lot longer arc than what it was.
Yeah.
It was like a 3-episode arc.
But how much do we have? I mean, honestly, I mean, you think about it. We're going to go to 9 episodes. We'll get a break. And then they'll start up again. And was it go to 15?
Yeah, it'll be 6 more starting in January. Sometime.
So we don't have, we only have 4 more episodes to go till the break, and then, not many more left after that. I mean, it's like,
but the thing is, they've barely even talked about the Klingon War. I mean, this is all supposed to be the Klingon War, and like we've seen like one engagement, and they just stopped the mining attack. So I mean, like, we saw the outbreak of the war, we saw the mining attack, and like all this other stuff's happened. Next season, I mean, just feel like if they wrap up the war at the end of this season, I feel like it's not enough time.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because they're not dealing with it a lot. They're dealing with all this other stuff. They're dealing with how the ship works. And, like, they're dealing with a lot more stuff than I thought they would be, since we were told this was going to be a long arc and it was all going to be interconnected. So I was thinking it'd be all about the war, and they're doing all this other stuff, which is far more Star Trek-y than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My theory is that Stamets is got planted into he is from the Mirror Universe. He's planted in, and he's trying to get the Spore Drive into the Mirror Universe so they can utilize it. And I think he's going to get he's going to have, so Stamets, because he's an operative from the Mirror Universe, he's going to bring the Discovery into their universe, and they're going to try to take it over. That's my theory right there. That's a very distinct possibility of what could happen.
That could be like almost like a two-parter type thing.
Oh, it's definitely going to be, yeah, it's not going to be something to wrap up real quick. So
man, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a cool theory. Like, I think something's gonna be weird with Ash Tyler, and
I think Ash Tyler's got to be a plant by the Klingons, or like you said, Vox or somebody.
Someone tweeted at me whenever I said Vox. Someone said maybe he's an. Someone tweeted at me said maybe he's an augment, and I'm like, that could be a reason why he's able to survive 7 months on a Klingon ship, and not be dead, other than all the snoo-snoo he's getting.
Well, Klingon Susnu is a little rough, so.
Good job.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's why I said maybe he's an augment. Maybe that's how he's able to survive all that snoo-snoo and beatings when he's not getting snooed.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Also, we didn't touch on this, but Harry Mudd brings up about Lorca's past.
Oh, this was epic. Like
then he said he's too good to go down with his own ship.
If there's any question that Lorca's Section 31, I think this erases any doubt. So Harry Mudd brings up an incident where all his crew is lost, and he's the only one that escapes. But then Lorca's like, oh, well, you left out one little thing. It's like, I let them die so they didn't get tortured by the Klingons. Like, I blew them up. I was like, whoa. Like, I'm not. Yeah. Like,
every I was like, single, that's not better, dude. That's not better.
Not cool, man. Not cool.
Like every single episode, something comes out about Lorca that's just so out there. And I'm just like, man. He's got to be Section 31. That's got to be why he's got all this leeway. That's got to be why he got upset when they told him to rein in on the Spore Drive. Because, I mean, like, he had the authority to begin with because he's Section 31, I'm assuming. But then when they openly gave him that power so he didn't have to be subversive about it, when they openly gave him that power to stop the war, he's just like, oh, man, I love watching Lorca. He's such a compelling character. He is a dark, evil character, and I think that's interesting. Oh, man.
Dave's geeking out.
I love Lorca so much. I just all the other captains are just so one-dimensional. I mean, I love Kirk. I love Picard. I love Sisko. I love Archer. Janeway's okay. But I mean, like, they're once you see them, like, it's what you see is what you get, not with Lorca.
Well, yeah, he's definitely hiding something behind his back for sure. You know, I don't know. I he's like I said, he's gonna pull something, and we're gonna be like, no way! So
I can't wait.
So tons of theories. Is Lorca Garth of Isengard?
I hope not. That would make me sad.
Why would that make you sad?
because of the all Axanar thing. I don't want him to be tied to it at all.
Wow. The only part of me that does is just to like stick it to the Axanar people.
But at the same time, I just don't want him tied. I like that sticking it to him, but at the same time, I'm just like I just don't want it to be
let me
forgotten.
Throw this out. Yeah. Let me throw this out. Do you think that maybe this people when this was in development could have been that they developed the same idea at the same time? Like when we talked about Assignment Earth, Gary Seven, and the like Sonic Screwdriver and stuff like that, could it have been like a synchronicity that they both came up at the same idea of a Klingon war? And I'm just saying, like, is it a possibility like that?
Well, I mean, the Klingon War was a given, and they both wanted to explore it. So, I mean, like, beyond that broad stroke, I mean...
Granted, I think their time frame for the Klingon War is
vastly different.
Yeah. It's not right. It's not in
like
the right spot.
The Garth of Izar one from Axanar was, like 15 years before this incident, I think.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But, whatever. You know. What, any other thoughts you guys want to throw out between all these things? I mean, I throw up some of my theories, what's happening with it.
Oh, so I was thinking about this when we were talking about the scene with Lorca and Laurel and her how well she spoke English. And I loved the fact, like, if you've ever heard Mary Chief talk, she does not talk with any kind of dialect. And I loved the dialect that they created for Laurel when she's speaking English. I know it's like silly, but I thought that was such a neat touch, because Klingons would have, like, the Klingons we've seen up to this point just kind of talk like this, and they kind of are just rough, and but she actually had a, like, where she kind of rolled her R's a little bit and had these, used the Klingon ah sound, and like there, I thought that was very cool. And she talked about it on After Trek, and it was just a neat, it was neat to see how much thought they had put into how she would speak English. They really, their attention to detail with the Klingon on the show is just stunning. It's so exciting to hear and understand things, even as a beginner level speaker. Mm-hmm. I've been able to understand so much more than I ever would have expected to, and definitely more than I've ever understood on a previous Trek series.
Right,
and
right.
And it's really exciting. It's been really exciting. They genuinely care, and it really comes out.
I like that too. I saw that part of After Trek where they said they gave her a Klingon accent to speak English in. I loved. I mean, it did sound very unique the way she spoke, and I liked that a lot.
And she's the one who showed up, I guess, to their first rehearsal, and she'd already, like, had a dog-eared copy of the Klingon dictionary with highlights and pages bent over and all kinds of notes in the margins. So she's definitely – they are all in on their Klingon language, and it's really fun. It's really, really fun to hear that and see that kind of stuff. So,
Jen, are you seeing a lot of people complain about the Klingon subtitles? I am seeing an inordinate amount of people complaining. Even on Aaron and I's YouTube video that we did talking about the first two episodes, the second comment we got, the guy was complaining about the Klingon subtitles. I'm just like, if this is a World War II show – show and the Kling and the, and the, I mean, not the Klingon, the Germans spoke in German, like I feel like that's more immersive.
It's really exciting. I understand there were definitely complaints about how slow they were speaking. And they were speaking a little slow in the first episode. To Kuvma, Chris Obi, if you've ever actually heard Chris Obi talk, he has such a deep voice, and he has a dialect. And it kind of comes through in his Klingon when he's speaking Klingon. And of all of the people, his Klingon was probably the most difficult to understand. Yeah. But I also am like, look, Klingons don't mince words. And they are going to make sure that you understand exactly what they're saying the first time they say it, so that there is no question. They will not repeat themselves. So they're going to speak slow. They're going to speak deliberate, and they're not going to waste any words. And I definitely feel like that's something that came through. And then I know a lot of people complain, too, about, oh, it sounds really muffled. And the irony of that is that they're actually speaking it right. Klingon actually is designed to be really far in the back of the throat and to utilize the back upper palate a lot to make sounds. So you're not saying, when you say, like, if I say dog, normally my tongue is closer to my teeth, but the D sound in Klingon is further back. So it's more like duh, like a duh sound. Duh. And, yeah. And you put your tongue way back on your upper palate. And then you've got your and your. It's a lot of back of the throat. And it was designed to be spoken with prosthetic teeth in. Like, they knew that that was going to be a thing when they were making the language. So there was care taken with those sounds, too, to make sure that it could be spoken with prosthetic teeth in. It's certainly easier to speak it without, but but it can be done. And they their pronunciation on this show overall, there are certain things that get a little muddy, the GH sound and the big H, the kind of blend together a little bit or get dropped. I think some of that is just as much in the post-production sound engineering. So they did all the lines on set, but they did re-record everything. Hmm. And then the sound engineers actually ran them through a program to make it sound like they have two sets of vocal cords, which makes perfect sense because of the internal redundancy of Klingon organs.
So that's the external. Maybe.
Maybe. But that's why you hear, like, when you hear them speak, even when she's speaking in English, you hear this, like, second set of, like, resonance happening. It almost sounds like she has reverb on herself when she's talking. And it's because they've done this, like, vocal trick in post-production to make it sound like they have two sets of vocal cords. And I think that that's part of why some of the sounds get a little, like,
lost,
muddy and a little lost. But overall, like, God, their language is so good. And the fact that it's all accurate, I know Robin Stewart and Alan Anderson are Robin was the one originally hired to do all of the translating work for the actors or for the script. And then she worked with the vocal coaches that worked directly with the actors because the filming schedule ran over time when it was supposed like it was it went longer than it was supposed to. Robin is a pilot. And it ended up running into her busiest season. And so if she was unavailable to make last minute changes, she recruited Alan. Robin lives in Vancouver. Alan lives in Indiana. And so she recruited Alan to pick up any extra little bits and pieces here and there that, in case she was unavailable for some because she was in the air or something like that. So it's really neat to know the people involved and know the care that they took with creating some of those things like the Klingon Mach Tachjaj. Klingon Mach is kind of has been a sort of non-canon kind of more Klingon speaker thing, I believe, rally cry that we are Klingon, Klingon Mach. It was used in a Klingon Christmas carol in a place of God bless us, everyone. Mm. it's this little thing. So the Klingon Mach Tachjaj is, I thought was a really cool nod to, you know, we will continue to be Klingon and may we continue to be Klingon and. I thought that was really, really rad. And that was a choice that Robin made very specifically. She was a little nervous with some of the news that came out when they were very blatantly, the producers started very blatantly saying that they were modeled after sort of modern day nationalists and Trump supporters and things like that had come out in the news. And she was worried that there is going to be some kind of like white nationalist decision to take on Klingons as the new Pepe the Frog.
Oh, Jesus.
And, you know, like oh, that idea is, you know, the producer put it out there and it's like, no,
right,
please.
Right.
And so like, you know, using a phrase that has been established, sort of pre-established well before that came out, was one of her ways of kind of making sure that you know, that was something that was established way before that, you know, the 2016 election was even a glimmer in anybody's eye. So
interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of backstory there. That's very you know, interesting how this all developed with the Klingons and how they have they worked that through.
Like, why was it Mark Okrand? Do you know why he wasn't involved with the Discovery? Because I know he was involved with Into Darkness.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff. I think he was potentially busy with something else, or like Robin is amazing. She's a member of the Klingon Language Institute. She has been well decorated by Mark Okrand as on more than one occasion as a friend of Maltz. A friend of Maltz is a Klingon Language Institute honor that's bestowed upon people who have helped to further the Klingon language. Robin wrote the entire level one KLC, the Klingon language certification program. So the KLCP1 program that's available on the Klingon Language Institute website. And it was what I used over the last year to study to take the level one test this past summer at the KLI KEPA. And I passed with a 19 and a half out of 20. Like,
awesome. Nice.
Her grasp, and she's considered a grammarian, she is one of the best people. And Mark even said that it's in excellent hands with her. I don't remember all of the details behind why he didn't do it, but
I'm not saying she's not doing a good job. I just think it's weird that the creator wasn't like, I don't know if he, I just wanted to know if there was a story as to why he wasn't involved too.
I mean, he definitely created new words for it. So okay. Like this past summer, because she was went on set and she saw the sarcophagus and she was like, she messaged Mark and was like, I think we're going to need a word for this. and so she's got some great stories about working with it. And Mark did actually create a bunch of words for it. We did get a word for tardigrade and things
nice.
Like that.
Nice.
So that was kind of fun to know that was – we didn't know at the time. It was sort of like one of those moments where we're flipping through the booklet of new words over the summer and we're like, who asked for sarcophagus? Like, what?
Yeah, like certain things like why – because you don't know what's going to happen on the show. You're like, why would anybody want that?
Right. Well, and this was like the end of July. So, you know, I mean, we had no idea at that point. And then, yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah. Now we know.
So is the Klingon Language Institute the place to get all the new Klingon words since the Klingon dictionary is still dated like, what, 86 or something like that?
Yeah, there's a few great resources out there that get updated pretty frequently with new words. I believe the KLI website gets updated regularly with new words because we get them at once or twice a year. We'll get new words usually at the KEPA and the KEPHOME. The KEPA usually happens in the States and it's the big annual conference, and the KEPHOME happens in Europe, and there's actually I think more people who attend it, but it was created after KEPA, so it's considered like the smaller meeting, annual conference.
Does it change, or is it always in the same location? KEPA
it used to be outside of, I believe, like Philadelphia or something, or Pittsburgh or something like that. And then for the last few years, it's been in Chicago. Next year is actually the 25th anniversary of KEPA. And so it's going to be held in Indianapolis. So it's still in the Midwest and fairly central, a fairly centralized location for people to get to is the one thing that they were looking for.
Nice.
So.
Cool. Very cool.
So love and Discovery. It's fantastic. Love the Klingon. Stop complaining about subtitles. They're amazing.
Seriously.
Stop complaining about Discovery. I mean, what the hell, people? If you don't like Discovery, I understand there's maybe it's like some choices, but come on, chill out.
I mean, like, if you don't like Discovery, stop watching it.
I mean,
like,
our local friend in his review complained about the subtitles too.
I know. Whatever. You know, everyone's got to be a critic, you know, but what are you going to do?
I don't know. I love it. I love everything. I love just about everything about the show except for the Klingon ships. That was not a D7, and it was also not a Bird of Prey. I hope we get some Klingon point of view stuff soon that kind of explains what's going on with Klingon ships and stuff like that. Because I just I love Discovery, but the Klingon ships are just driving me nuts.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
Devin, my husband Devin is pretty much like, I can almost get over how different they look, but I'm really mad. He seems really genuinely annoyed by the ships.
I mean, just when they called it a D7, I screamed at the TV last night. I was just like, that's not a D7. Looks nothing like a D7.
Same thing.
It is not a D7. And then on Discovery, they called that same ship a bird of prey. And I'm like, okay, oh, they're...
The Federation just has no freaking clue what these ships are.
I hope they explain that or something, that they have no clue. Because, I mean, that's not a D7. Come on, guys.
Don't know.
Unless they just call all their ships D7s that aren't Vorcha class or Bird of Preys, I don't know.
Maybe there's an explanation later on.
I hope so.
Who knows?
Because I love the Klingon makeup. I think they look amazing. That's just the ships. I'm like, come on, make the ships look like Klingon ships, please.
Right.
I mean, the Federation ships all share a
similar design.
The design philosophy. Mm-hmm. But the Klingon ships are just like way out there. I mean, like the Kuvma ship kind of resembles a D7 if you squint.
Right.
Yeah. Really, really squint.
You got to squint really hard. That's the closest thing that resembles the D7 in the show.
I actually want to know if T'Kuvma is the only person who puts sarcophaguses on the exterior of his ship. Because it makes sense because they seem like sort of almost like a religious cult. Particular house, and it doesn't seem like I want to know if that's if that's something that has now been changed, or if that, as far as it's something all ships do, or if it's something very specific to his house.
I would assume it's his house, but so the war started, and they were sitting in the graveyard for 6 months. I'm like, was it really a holy war, or were they just wanting to fight the Federation anyway? It seems kind of ambiguous, even from the Klingon perspective, after seeing last week's episode, because they were sitting there for 6 months. And, like, the guys you started the war over, you didn't check on them?
Well, like, Klingons don't give a shit. And, let's face it, those guys, they're just kind of rednecks. You know, they don't. Their car doesn't start. You know,
but still, like, the Federation went and retrieved the telescope. Why didn't they just blow it out of the sky? Why didn't they detonate the Shinzo? Like, and there's lots of weird things. Like,
there is a couple weird points
from last episode.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they didn't destroy the Shinzo, but
it's a Klingon
space
ship.
Refuse.
Oh look, it's a
we pollute everything. We're humans, and we pollute everything, including deep space.
Yeah, just let it sit there.
Just let it sit there. You know, maybe it'll absorb into the planet and things will evolve out of the Shinzo. Like it'll be seeded by the germs left on the Shinzo.
I know, yeah. All of a sudden you get new life off of some weird stuff.
That'd be weird. But you know, they had to come back for the telescope. My theory was Saru took it because Saru knew it was valuable to her. But Saru seems like he didn't know it existed. So he just took it. So I'm like, then my theory went out the window. So they literally sent someone back, and they're like, oh, look, there's a Klingon ship there with Klingon life signs. Let's just put them out their misery. It's wartime. They would be – Confederation would be completely justified in doing so. It just seems like a really weird decision to let the Klingon ship be, let the Shinzo be.
Because of drama, Dave. They got to play the drama.
Indeed.
Well, cool. I think we've touched about everything we possibly could for this episode, and we've expounded on tons of theories that could or could not happen. So I'm pretty fascinated with what is going to unfold, and we're only in episode 5, so we have quite a bit to go.
I love how the show just like is steadily staying so good and always keeping us guessing. Like, this is absolutely beautiful.
Right. Anything else you guys want to add?
I'm good. I'm always like, buy my music. Buy my music.
Right.
KlingonPopWarrior.com.
Well, obviously, yeah. So why don't you give out all that information listeners can tune into that.
Of course. Yeah. You can find me at KlingonPopWarrior.com. I'm on Facebook.com/KlingonPopWarrior. I'm on Twitter at KlingonPop. I tend to get more political on Twitter than anything else. And I'm doing Extra Life this year. So I'm raising money for Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. And so you can find links to that on my Facebook page and on my Twitter page. I'm trying to raise $1,000. And if you donate any time between now and November 4th, if you donate $25, you can pick a karaoke song for me to sing on the air. I will sing whatever you send me.
Wow.
Within reason, I will. I mean, as long as I can find it, I have to be able to find it. So.
Sure. And then you're doing that live concert. That's you said that's November 4th.
November 4th, that's Extra Life Day. So I will start streaming at 8 a.m. Central Time. I'll put my ridges on live on the stream, and then I'll be gaming in them until midnight.
Nice.
And I'll be gaming all the way until 8 a.m. the following morning. It's a 24-hour marathon, but because of daylight savings, I'm doing 25 hours.
Ooh.
And it's all for Children's Miracle Network Hospital, and in the probably mid to late afternoon on Extra Life Day, I will be doing a live stream concert. So we will be busting out all the Klingon Pop Warrior hits, and my guitar player is going to come over, and we'll be crammed in my little office here, and we'll play you some music.
Awesome. I can't wait to see that.
It's going to be fun. Absolutely fun. Yeah, and this is going to be spectacular. I don't know how you're going to stay up for 25 hours, but that's...
This is my third year, and I honestly, every year I'm like, how the last 2 years have been like, I don't know how I just did that.
Right.
I definitely don't drink a lot of I don't drink caffeine. I try really hard to avoid caffeine. If I do, I have it really, really late. It's not until like 3 or 4 in the morning. I don't drink beer.
Do you find beer and caffeine restrict your vocal cords? Because some singers say that, other singers say they do not.
It's the caffeine. I have trouble with the caffeine. It tends to dry you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'll drink Sprite if I'm going to drink a soda while I'm singing. But mostly I drink a lot of water and maybe some tea. So, yeah, it's a long day, but it's really fun. I'll be playing – I've got a list of games going right now that I will likely be playing. Usually bust out some Gauntlet, which is super fun. Mm-hmm. Magicka, which is absolutely batshit insane if you've never seen anybody play it. My husband and I will probably log in and do some Final Fantasy 14. I have Lego Star Wars. I'm thinking about playing Sonic Generations. At about 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll do some Goat Simulator.
Oh, Goat Simulator is wonderful.
So good.
Those guys a couple of years at PAX East. They were really cool.
Oh my God. It's such a wacky, good, ridiculous game. Doom is whatever was making Doom crash, open OBS has been fixed. Whatever update they've done in the last like 4 or 5 months has finally fixed that. So I'm definitely going to be playing some Doom, like the newest one that came out last year.
Oh, yeah, it's so fun.
It's so beautiful. I'll and be playing some Hearthstone.
Having used flashlights, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And then I'm gonna run through Star Trek Timelines. So I'm super addicted to Star Trek Timelines.
Oh, I play
but
it too.
When I first started playing, I found it a little confusing, and so I'm gonna walk through all the different stuff on there and kind of how to play, and because it's available on Steam now, so I'll be able to play it on my computer.
Oh, awesome.
And then I can log in with my current account. And then I only tried to play Star Trek Online once before, and it was a flaming disaster, and I almost broke my keyboard. I was so angry. Mm. But I'm going to try again. And my friend Terry Lynn from the GNT show is going to join me. She's a Star Trek Online junkie and knows all about it. So I'm hoping that between the two of us, we can actually get me playing Star Trek Online.
Awesome.
This
Very
year.
Cool. Very cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. I don't know if I'll watch all 25 hours, but.
No, but yes, please tune in. I'm going to be on Twitch, so it'll be streaming on Twitch, and there'll be a chat room, and you'll be able to chat with me while I'm playing, and hopefully, it will be a fun time. It has been the last couple of years, so.
Awesome! Very cool. Oh, you can find us online at SynthaHolics.com. You can email us at SynthaHolics@Yahoo.com. You can join the Facebook group at Facebook.com/group/SynthaHolics. And the show on Twitter, you can find at SynthaHolic Duo. Personally, myself, you can find at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004. And hey, if you got any extra change going in your pocket, maybe you could swing it our way and go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Any little bit helps keep the lights on, keeps us podcasting even longer. And we always enjoy if you can give us a rate and review on iTunes, 5 stars preferably, and nice things said about us. Please, nice things. And also, as always, if you have a friend that enjoys Star Trek or just getting into Star Trek Discovery, point them our way. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to spread our podcast, and we appreciate anybody who can do that for us.
Oh, we actually got a tweet a couple days ago that's so far we're the most level-headed approach to Star Trek Discovery he's heard on a podcast so far.
Well, that's cool.
Yay!
So I was like, yay, we did something right, I think.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't think we're like over the moon at first, but then we got, after episode 3, we're like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but we don't shit on it, but we're not also like, you know, like blowing sunshine up its ass either. So we'll point, I mean, you know, you point out a couple flaws already and, you know,
yeah.
Things. So.
Oh, yeah, no matter what I say, I love it. But I'm just like, you know, there's this, there's that. Just the D7s, which aren't D7s.
Right,
which,
yeah. Absolutely. but, yeah, we do enjoy it. We were enjoying Star Trek Discovery a lot. So
immensely.
Yeah, so buckle up. We're going to keep going on for this until our break. We'll go back to our regular...
regularly scheduled...
Star Trek talk, and then we'll go probably back into Discovery when that goes back into full swing. Lastly, real quick about myself, I have a Kickstarter.
Yes!
For my comic book... graphic novel Return to Snakeland. If you want to check that out, go to Kickstarter, do a search for Return to Snakeland. If you can contribute to that, if that's something that's interests you, something I've been working on for quite a
few years. It is fantastic. Go listen to the Nerdynomicon's podcast they did. Aaron was a guest on there. They talked all about Return to Snakeland. It was super fascinating talk. It's about local lore and urban legends and murder, suicide, crazy things happening local to us.
Believe
it or not, you know, right. Things that do happen in Buffalo. I guess they're not good things, but
there's good things. Just we always focus on the bad. So, but yeah. So if that's something interested, obviously, if you want to hear the backstory, go to the Nerdynomicon. It's the episode labeled Snakeland, and yeah, good time.
Good time. Yeah, check it out. They're almost at their goal. Oh, have you met your goal yet?
We have met our goal, and we're trying to figure out stretch goals now.
Awesome.
So I didn't think we were going to make it that fast.
So, yeah.
I really did.
It's always exciting when that happens.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, that happened fast.
So, yeah, like check it out. Keep an eye open for their stretch goals that they're going to be putting out soon. And donate to Snakeland. It's an amazing comic. Aaron is a beautiful artist.
Thank you.
Does great stuff in it. It's super unique. Very beautiful.
Yeah, so great show. We'll get into next episode 7. I think it's Leith. Leith is the name of that.
I didn't even see a preview for the next episode.
I didn't either.
There was a little brief one in After Trek. They put a little brief thing in After Trek.
I watched After Trek just to see a preview, and all they showed was like one little scene where she like spazzes out. I was like, okay.
But that disco shirt, like the whole.
I want that
like,
disco shirt.
Feed blew up the hashtag After Trek. Just went nuts with people going, how do we get those shirts? Because they're just black shirts that say disco on them.
Disco.
Like, what? I'm like, yes. Me and Spark from 5-Year Mission, we were both like, Trek musician must have.
I like it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jen, for joining us today. It's so good to have you back on.
Thank you guys for having me back.
Awesome. We can't wait to see your gaming and your live performance.
That'll be fun. We got to get you back for some more Star Trek talk. It's always fantastic having you on.
Yeah, especially your insights.
I'm like, I know people. This is like the first time when I can be like, I know people who know things.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
And we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Awesome.
Woo!
Oh, so good. That episode last night, I was just like, what?
What?
So much to unpack.
You sound great. Aaron's here. It's just we're sitting 180 degrees away from each other, so
hello.
It's one or the other.
And I'm all sniffy. We've both had colds, so
yeah, I'm sniffly too. It's going to be fun editing this episode. Like last episode, I was sniffly with Guy, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how many times I sniffed into the microphone.
I took the Sudafed with the real stuff in the methamphetamine.
Woo!
I went to the pharmacist. I said, give me the real shit.
That's all I buy.
Don't give me that watered down garbage.
Yeah, no. I buy 12 hour.
Yeah, that's what I got too. Yep.
That's the best.
Yeah, yes. Except
I only need to take one a day. I usually take it in the morning, and it lasts me until I have to go to bed.
Do you feel like you're on crack all day? Like, ooh, ooh, ooh. That's how.